Hey everyone, Cecilia Callis here. I am an AI ethicist and technology writer and the author and founder of Remaining Human, which is a Substack and community focused on responsible AI and human-centered AI and exploring how humans can live in harmony with artificial intelligence. It's a really, you know, crazy time. There's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of noise out there. Remaining Human is your safe harbor during this transition. And it is a transition. It's a transition to a new societal landscape, technological landscape. And at Remaining Human, we provide this space where you can come and ask questions and learn kind of what's going on with AI and what you need to care about. So thank you so much for being here. Today, we are talking about AI ethics and what we mean when we talk about AI ethics. And maybe when you hear AI companies or the news talking about ethics in their technology. And to talk about this extremely important, kind of complicated subject, I'm joined by Dr. Jordan Lowen-Colon, who is a professor of AI ethics and policy at Queen's University Smith School of Business. He's also an ethics consultant in the field of responsible AI and a Taino scholar. And every day he's working to challenge business leaders and tech entrepreneurs to re-examine their relationship to AI and how their values really shape how they're making and using this technology. He's also an avid content creator with multiple podcast series. He writes poetry. He's a performer. And he's also a soon-to-be book author. So keep your eyes peeled for Reality Technologies, The Promises and Problems of Tech Culture to come out in 2024. That's by Jordan. And he's also just an incredible human being who I had the, again, privilege of sitting down with last week in the midst of a very hectic SF Tech Week to talk about something we both are incredibly passionate about, and that is the ethics of this technology that we're creating and becoming more aware of how our individual values and our values as a society feed into the way we are developing and using this technology. And with that, how can we come to understand our values more deeply in order to create technology that is more aligned with those values? Because I think when we think about technology, we're not always thinking about using it in a way that aligns with what we hold most dear, right? We are using it somewhat subconsciously. We're using it in ways that might not align with what we actually want. For example, we pick up the phone and go on social media apps all the time to distract ourselves when really maybe what we value is having time to think. And so in the context of ethics, when it comes to technology, as you'll see in this conversation, Jordan continuously brings it back to what do you as an individual value and how then can you use the technology in a way that aligns with those values? Because values are integral to ethics. We can't understand what is ethical without understanding what we hold to be true and moral and good. So I really hope that this conversation kind of sheds some light on these things. We also talk about some really important resources, including the Core Values Finder, which is a framework that helps you understand your own values, and the Values Canvas, which is a more practical tool that enables you to develop responsible AI strategies. And I've linked both of those in the post. But please let us know your thoughts. We're excited to share this with you and get this out into the world and to hear any questions you have. Until next time.
It is wonderful to be here. I absolutely love this city, and maybe I will be here someday.
Yeah, we were just talking about.
That's right. Potentially, be in the future. We'll see. We'll see if the tech giants want to hire me. Yeah. Although they typically don't hire their ethicists, right? So like that's part of the problem. Maybe they fire their ethicists.
Exactly, and that is one thing we're going to talk about today: is bringing ethics into the tech workplace and trying to instill ethical frameworks into teams and processes and products that are being rolled out in tech companies. This week is actually Tech Week in San Francisco, which has been interesting because for me every week is I don't really understand the rationale, but in that same vein, I think it's been interesting that like there's so many events in San Francisco this week that are all of like founders and builders, and you and I are going to a responsible tech event tonight, but it's one of the only ones I would say that's like very highly focused on responsible tech and ethical tech.
Yeah, I think it's the only one. It's the only one I saw. Is this your first tech week out here?
This is my first tech week since moving back to San Francisco.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think that really shows like that imbalance in
in responsible tech with some of the more like, let's build, let's like found startups, let's really shows the disparity in the actual AI development space as well. Would you agree with that?
100%, right? Because I mean, this particular piece of technology, people have been so excited and hyped by it over the past 3 years that the conversations around being responsible with it like are barely keeping up. And even thinking about like actually just the evolution of AI in general, it's like we had DeepMind like a decade ago. Like there was some stuff in the 90s. We watched Kasparov like get beaten in chess. But then it, like there's a sharp turn over the past 3 years, and now the conversations are completely different. And so, yeah, it's interesting to think like, yeah, even looking at all the Tech Week events, there's just, like, what, hundreds of events happening? And I think this one is the only responsible AI one that I noticed. Or, I mean, yeah, it's like doing my search, like this is the one I wanted to come to, but I didn't see any others.
Yeah, and so you've been in this space for a couple of years, and I want to take you back to when you first became interested in the AI space and tech, but specifically ethical tech and ethical innovation. And tell us a little bit about your journey into tech ethics and also how you've seen the space grow and change over the past couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. So the AI stuff was a bit accidental for me, but I've been in the emerging tech space probably since 2015. But back then, what I was really, really interested in was VR and video games. So 2015 was right around the time that the initial Oculus headset was being released. And there was tons of energy and excitement in the air about like, oh, like we're gonna be caught up in these like virtual worlds and like get carried away in experiences. And I remember at that time being fascinated both by what VR tech could do, but then being like, whoa, this stuff can do more than I think we realize. And so already having a bit of an ethical concern there, like how is this stuff being designed? What is it doing to us? What is it doing to us that we're maybe not consenting to? And how do we prepare for that? So that was my initial foray into like this, the ethical tech space. And I ended up writing my dissertation specifically looking at VR, its ability to induce altered states of consciousness. And then it was from there, it's like right around like historically at that time, it's where Facebook became Meta, and all of a sudden like the VR industry started to tank. And so I was like, okay, well, it's like I could keep pursuing the VR space, but it's like, I don't know how much of a future is there. And that's right when the AI conversations were starting up. And I was really, really lucky enough to get a postdoc at a pretty prestigious institution. They needed a tech ethicist because they were designing this AI tool that was going to help in cancer research. So I started doing AI ethics. That was back in 2020. So like right around when the pandemic was starting. And 4 years ago, wow, time goes fast. I have been in this space for a while. It's like I hadn't thought about it. It's like sometimes you just like sit down and do the time. So yeah, it's been 4 years. So like back then, that was before ChatGPT was released. The models, the early models we were working with, OpenAI's GPT-3. So like these powerful like machine learning models. But it was still like right before the major kind of like hype scene took off. And so it was more of like the machine learning type of stuff. Like how are the engineers like designing and programming these algorithms that are doing this like statistical analysis on the type of like really sensitive information. In this case, it was like images of oncology reports, seeing like images of how cancer was developing. And then how is this really complex computer science language being communicated to like the people that it's affecting. So that was my work at the time. And then as I started doing that work, I was in Southern Ontario and got connected with a friend who was doing consulting work for First Nations and Indigenous groups in Southern Ontario. So I started branching out into exploring and looking at Indigenous data sovereignty and Indigenous data governance and recognizing, oh man, like there's a whole other kind of ethical bent to this new technology and being worried about how data was getting used, how data was being spread, collected, all that. And so then I started taking those steps. And then started, like, again, that's like when historically ChatGPT was released and everyone's like getting excited. So we have all these AI startups popping up everywhere, and being someone who had been in the scene long enough and like part of this language, all of a sudden getting contacted by startups being like, hey, how do we do this ethically? And at the time, as like an editor, like the primary job is just like to say no, slow down. And no one likes hearing that, especially not like entrepreneurs and startups. No one likes hearing like no, slow down. But it's like part of it's like, look, it's like I can't give you answers. I can't tell you like what you should or shouldn't do yet. And in a lot of these specific ways, because I'm still learning like about this tech, and like the engineers are still trying to figure this out. They don't understand why it does the things that it does.
That's the whole concept and the ideology and the frameworks of ethics is it's not about knowing. It's asking questions and being comfortable with the fact that there often is no right answer to a question. That there's often like two things can exist at once. Mm-hmm. And you and I were talking before about, you know, why has ethics emerge so prominently for us. It feels really prominently, maybe not for the rest of the world, but so prominently within tech and AI today, when, you know, 10 years ago, there was, to our knowledge, like not a lot of discussion around ethics in the context of social media, for example.
That's right.
And I do wonder, like, what, given the discussion that more people are paying attention to ethics now in the lead up to AI, like, how can that maybe help shape the future of AI when we think about, like, what if people had been asking these questions in 2006 when social media was slowly wrapping up or quickly wrapping up?
Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, like philosophically, I've been studying philosophers who have been doing ethics. Like I'm trained as like a classic ethicist. I've taken all those courses and stuff like that. So like people have been writing ethical treaties and such for a long time, and even on technology. Although it's interesting, even using the word ethics and calling yourself an ethicist, I find there's like, if I'm going to break it out, there's like three types of people. So like there's the type of people that like telling others what they should do, and so they take on the mantle of ethicists. They just like telling people what to do. There's like a second group of people that likes telling people what to do, but doesn't want to admit that they like telling people what to do. And so like they don't call themselves ethicists, but they still tell people what to do. And then there's people in a third camp, I think, that are like myself, where it's like, I don't really tell people what to do, but like people like are constantly asking, what should I do? And I'm like, throw up my hands. I'm like, I don't know. It's like, I can tell you what I might do in this situation or ideally what I would like to do, but it's going to depend on like, did I eat breakfast that day? Did I get a full night's sleep? So it's like, yeah.
And it'll depend on an individual's values.
That's right. 100%. Yeah.
That's what I think is so complicated.
Yeah.
Ethics, especially in the context of technology and AI, because AI will impact everyone and everyone will have a different relationship.
Yeah.
Some people will use it to do their shopping. Some people won't. Yeah. Some people will use it to do all of their, creative ideation, and some people won't. And so for me, it brings back to like, you can't have ethics without knowing your values deeply. And once you know your values deeply, it'll help guide your own ethical frameworks. And I know you've done some work in helping people identify their values.
100%. So like that's definitely the approach I take, because one of my favorite philosophers is Friedrich Nietzsche, and he doesn't say this directly. It's kind of a paraphrase, but it's the idea like if you don't know the origin of your beliefs and values, you're being controlled by them. And honestly, I think this is like fundamental just to like classic humanities training, like folks who like take like humanities courses, like the idea is to like look at like historical developments of values and ideas and beliefs. And that's kind of what philosophy is about as well. This is like studying those things to see like how are we being shaped and how can we like shape other things. And it's been interesting to get to your previous question, is see like this kind of explosion of these conversations, because in the 90s, when the internet was released, again, like we weren't really like having like conversations like, oh, what's the ethics of the internet, right? It's like we didn't really think about the impact of the technology. That's right. Yeah. And then even up through like the early aughts and like into the teens, the conversation started like really arising when we were like, oh, like social media seems to be having a massive impact on us that we weren't ready for. So now it's like a post-consequential thing. It's like we recognize like, oh, it had this major impact. And then people are like, how? Why? Which is an amazing question. And like, I wish like we would ask all the time, but it's like when things are having a subtle influence on us, we don't like necessarily think about asking like how or why, but like all of a sudden, all those scandals are coming out. We had Cambridge Analytica, the Amazon scandal, like seeing like, oh man, like this tech is doing stuff to us that we weren't ready for. And so bringing this kind of self-reflection and awareness, like, oh crap, like we need to take a closer look at this. So that's how this conversation started. And so it's like, AI was almost like prepped to be in that conversation because of all the mistakes that have been happening in the last decade. And now we're presented with what could be this humanity, planetary level shaping technology. And we're like, whoa, we do not want to repeat those same mistakes in the past. And yet, even in here, it's like, we don't want to repeat the same mistakes, but like this tech is still different than those ones. And so it's hard to predict what mistakes or what consequences we're going to try to make. And that's I think the struggle in the scenario is like, everyone's like, well, like, what should we do? And like, there's a lot of folks out there like pretending to be prophets and like pretending it's like, this is how it's going to happen. This is for sure how it's going to happen. But most people don't know. And so it's really easy to just like start listening to folks who are the most confident or speaking the most confidently or speaking the loudest. And so it's like trying to parse that out. And as you mentioned, I think at least the approach I take and I try to teach my students is we want to be careful about listening to loud voices and confident voices. This first step we need to take is figure out, what are our own values? How did we get those? Are they the values we want? And then once we have that type of awareness, now all of a sudden we're not being controlled by those values and we can start making decisions and maybe change things. So
I like what you're saying around listening to the loudest voices. And mm-hmm. I think about like the fact that, you know, I feel like every day I see another clip of Sam Altman making these proclamations that in a couple of years, you're going to be able to walk up to a piece of glass, he said this recently, and have that glass do anything that you could have wanted it to do.
Man.
And he's very definitive in this. He wrote a blog post a couple of years ago that was all around, you know, AI was going to completely change our world. Like, we need universal basic income.
Yeah.
This and that. And yeah, I wonder like how much weight we should be giving to someone's proclamations who hypothetically has a lot of the control, right?
Yeah,
now,
yeah,
but also knowing he has his own motives,
objectives,
and how do we help people discern like what should be listened to and what they should be doing on their own, right? I always encourage people to like do your own research, and for example, like, don't just use ChatGPT because it was the first product to market.
Like,
look at all of the LLMs that are available and see which ones align with your own values. For me, that's Anthropic's God, for example, because it's the most rooted in safety.
Their constitution is like fascinating. I've actually been trying to like get in touch. So, hey, any Claude folks, if you're listening to the Remaining Human podcast, I would love to chat to the folks that were involved in putting your constitution together. Because like and one of the things I talk about is, and I was genuinely surprised by this, is like bringing in non-Western perspectives. So there's something to be said about Claude, and then getting back to your point, like doing your own research, like part of that is tricky too, because like I think about like coming from academia, so much of research is locked behind paywalls, and like unless you have like access to like a university library that's like paying for all these type subscriptions, it's hard to get access to like the best research that's out there. And so what do is we rely on like journalists who are able to parse through like the advanced research that's coming out and like put it in their own words. But then on top of that, it's like the folks writing the most advanced research on AI and engineering and production and algorithms, they're often not great writers. So it's like, it's hard to understand like what arguments they're making. So it's like, I think back to when I was doing the postdoc, and it was my first time working in a computer science lab. And again, I was coming from a humanities background. So like, I'm familiar with literature, reading, writing, like obtuse philosophical thought. But like programming language and the ways programmers talk is a completely different language than what I was used to. So like part of the struggle of that work was actually this kind of translation, like trying to translate what are the engineers and the computer scientists like actually talking about in a way that like humanities folks or other folks could kind of understand. And so, yeah, so even thinking about like parsing it out, I mean, one of the things I think that makes like Sam Altman and some of these other thinkers, like people like grasp them, is like they write in a way that people like kind of make sense.
And communicate in a way.
Exactly. So it's like
podcast, and he says things definitively,
yeah,
and authoritatively, yeah, and slowly.
That's right. Yeah.
So much of our communication matters, right?
That says the person trained in communication. but I agree with you. And then, like, on the other hand, so it's like you've got like Sam Altman, who's like the kind of positive hype. Then you have folks like Jeffrey Hinton. And by the way, congratulations, Jeffrey, on your Nobel Prize. Who are, that's well deserved, yeah. But like, who are on the other side of the spectrum, who are talking about the fears and the worries and like the catastrophic possibilities. And like, I mean, I don't think it doesn't take much like research or understanding to realize how close this tech probably is, or like how many steps away it is from being like mega like catastrophe. Like, it's wild to think that like measuring risk and innovation here, like one of the risks of AI is like global societal collapse, like just like totally on the table, totally, in a way that like hasn't been since nuclear.
Oh, yeah. Even when you think about the fact that there's been like research and surveys done by the leading AI thinkers and authors, who have come together and participated in a survey to define that there's like I'm not quoting this definitively, but it's somewhere between like 5 and 8% of existential risk.
Yeah.
And, you know, someone hearing that might think that's not a lot.
Yeah.
8%. But it's like, who gets to decide that we create something that has 5 to 8% of existential risk?
Yeah.
Putting everyone's lives in danger, right? It's a very select amount of people,
yeah,
making decisions about technology that has a huge amount of risk, will cause things like mass unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be like saying things so definitive.
That's right. Yeah. You know? Like, don't want to contribute too much to the hype. Yeah.
But there's a strong possibility that it will.
Yeah.
And like, I think this really comes back to ethics around like, is creating technology when you don't know the results or like how it's going to be used once it's widespread in society, is that ethical when you're operating in such high degrees of uncertainty?
Yeah.
we can't answer that question, right? That's
yeah,
it's asking the questions
and yeah,
just parsing it apart.
I mean, it depends on what your values are. And so I think a lot of folks, they have a lot of their values are tied up in like, in the one hand, like protecting our country. So it's like tons of arguments I hear. It's like, look, if we don't do it, someone else will. Someone else being China. That's the unstated someone else. And like half these things, like, that's right. Yeah. So it's like someone else will. And like, do we want this power in our enemy's hands? And it's wild that so much of what's driving a lot of innovation here, a lot of the push towards continuing to develop, continuing to experiment, blah, 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 is fear. Like, people are fear driven. And so, and it's, they're not afraid that this technology will destroy us. They're afraid that someone else using this technology will destroy us. And so it's like, we gotta develop it and gotta get it in the hands of the good guys. Yeah.
That says so much. And people say this all the time, that AI is a mirror of who we are as humanity today. And I think that can be kind of taken in so many different ways, but that for me is also an example of like, we're creating AI to like beat each other,
yeah,
in a sense, which says so much about where we are as a global society of like, we need to beat each other, we need to win, we need to conquer, when in reality we really should be thinking of all of us together, as one, even when we come from different countries, when we're creating a technology that could impact all of us.
Yeah.
And I don't know how we create shifts towards that, but it feels important in this moment, right?
Yeah. I mean, the one approach I'm taking is like, okay, like, what are your values? What are the things that you value? And then are those things that we should value, or should we value other things higher? And so it's like comparing. So one of the things I try to introduce my students is like, okay, look, for the past 500 years, we've been working under a particular set of values. If we're thinking historically, these are typically colonial values. They're Western, white, European, Christian, male values. Even capitalism as we know it, it comes with particular values. That's brought us to this point right now. The question is, are those values ones that are going to take us into what could be this like next stage of humanity. Like this is artificial intelligence. And again, like even using AI, it's like, what are we saying by that? Like, are we talking about machine learning? Are we talking about large language models? Are we talking about big data, blah, blah, blah? We could break it all down. Like even just doing the quick summary. So AI is this revolutionary technology and it's confronting us and forcing us to not just think about how we interact with the world differently, but how we interact with ourselves and what does it mean to be human and all this. And so the question is, are those values that we've had for the last 500 years, are those the ones we want for the next 500? Because like, let's be clear, the values we've had for the last 500 years haven't been the values for the entirety of humanity. Humanity has like a whole long history of different cultures and communities having different values and being able to survive and become and thrive in different ways in different environments. We just had a really dominant set for the last 500 years. And some people are like, oh, like we got to celebrate that. Like, look at how far we've come. Okay, yeah. But I mean, humans have been on this planet for the hundreds of thousands of years. And it's only been in the last like 200 that we've gotten to the point of like societal, economic, and planetary collapse. So maybe what does it say about those values that like, as good as they've been, as much that they've like brought tons and or thousands and thousands of humans out of suffering and pain and blah, 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 blah. There's also negative effects. So let's know what those values are. And then let's see if maybe there's a new set. And I think one of the things we can learn is from indigenous methodologies and indigenous groups around the world. And I want to be really careful, like there's something to be said about not just like doing kind of a pan-indigeneity and thinking like, oh, all indigenous folks are the same. No, like all indigenous folks have very unique representations. But there are some commonalities that I think are worth looking at. And some of those is having a planetary thinking, like thinking, making decisions that always consider the planet first, not just humans, right? Because like we're so focused on humans and there's a whole host of others, but I'm talking for a while. So,
no, it's, yeah. It's something that came up in an AI salon that I co-led, co-facilitated the other night. And the theme of that was human flourishing,
mm-hmm.
and which is a great theme.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's something we need to talk about, and it kind of encompasses so much of what we talk about when it comes to AI. But someone raised their hand when in the process of us talking about, okay, what within human flourishing do we want to speak about? And said, you know, what about like other forms of consciousness,
mm-hmm.
the planet?
Yeah. Octopus, yeah. Octopi. Like,
there's some really cool things we can do in that regard, in the sense of Asa Raskin is this founder for Simp Humane Technology. He's mm-hmm. doing a lot of work on like decoding animal language. And so, but again, yeah. it's a human focus because it's like, oh, so
that's right.
can converse with animals.
Yeah.
But so much of this, the ethics of AI is wrapped up in sustainability and
yeah.
the lack thereof.
Yeah.
The fact that just generating one image with DALL-E is this equivalent of charging your iPhone to completion.
Yeah.
And it's something that's not talked about, and just the vast amounts of water that is used to power data centers, to cool down data centers.
Yeah.
And I want to be clear, like there's a lot of like innovation and work being done to figure out how to do things more sustainably.
Mm-hmm.
But one argument, Gary Marcus, who's a phenomenal AI thinker, I saw him speak the other day, said was like, we should be waiting at before we use these tools. Like, wait, let's figure it out, and then we can use the tools.
Okay, yeah.
So that's not really going to happen because
what if our enemies get a hand of it?
We were trying to switch off.
Yeah.
It was so compelling because he was like, I want to see a boycott. I want to see, like, if we could boycott the use of AI just for a second. We're not saying like mm-hmm. AI is bad. We're not saying AI should never be used. We're just saying, let's figure this out
mm-hmm.
and how to do it right, how to do it ethically.
Yeah.
And then start using it. But it's like, we can't, the forces feel so strong.
Yeah. I haven't done enough historical research, and I'm sure there's someone out there that has, and I would, if your listeners know who has or have any book recommendations, please pass them my way. I would love to do some research around, one, more research around the development of United Nations post-World War II. And then two, also the response to nuclear proliferation. I think I'm sure there's tons we can learn like positive and negative, like mistakes they made in setting up like nuclear proliferation agreements that we could start applying to AI right now. And the fact that it doesn't seem like we're having these kind of global conversations is concerning, given the impact that this tech is having. And then especially, I mean, even getting back to the energy consumption, like it's wild to think, like, I mean, I'm pro nuclear as they come. I love that, like, we're getting all this extra research and support. I don't know how I feel about them reopening Three Mile Island, but like, nevertheless, it's like we should have been investing in nuclear much sooner. But now the tech companies are doing it. But the chances are, once they make these centers that is producing better, cleaner energy, they're just going to find more ways to use that energy, because the current values we have is the more energy you have, the more you can produce. Production is better. Creating is better. Like, we want to like ramp up our GDP. So produce. But maybe that's not a good value. Like, maybe this like consistent drive to increase productivity isn't a value we want. But as long as that's what's driving us, like, I can't see us getting towards sustainability. But again, if we're not aware of our values, they're just going to keep controlling us.
And I love how you're like, with everything we're talking about, you're consistently drawing it back to like your individual values, because I think it is the bedrock of how we move through the world, the relationships we have, and relationship with technology. And I know you did an exercise recently with some of your students, mm-hmm. where you kind of had them go through a process of defining their values, but in a very unique way. Why don't you tell the listeners about that?
I'm happy to share. Thank you for bringing this up. So, okay. So how I start my class is I have them, my students take this Find Their Values survey. If you type Find Your Values survey, you'll find it online. Some fantastic researchers and scholars doing this work, trying to scientifically figure out ways that we can become aware of what our values are. So there's the whole test, so like questionnaire, and they help you discover, oh, okay, like, I seem to be a person that values autonomy more so than like social solidarity, or I value kind of hedonism or pleasure more so than like service. It's like these types of things. And they break out. They've got this beautiful, colorful spectrum reel where you can see the variety of your values. So I start my class with students taking that so they can become aware what their own values are. And they might not, like, this might, for a lot of them, this is probably the first time ever like consciously having to think about like, oh, what are my values? So I do that. And then in this last week, I was teaching, I was lecturing on the importance of the ethical AI values of transparency, privacy, and accountability. So like, you can, if you've studied like any of the ethical frameworks that are currently out, there's like well over like 300, the consistent ones that kind of keep popping up or that appear on most of these lists are like transparency, privacy, accountability. These are major, major like ethical values to include. So I was doing this lecture on it. And at the end, I was like, okay, well, let's do an accountability vote. And so I had my students stand up and I was like, okay, so if you think the primary people we should be holding accountable are our corporations, engineers, and developers, stand to the left. If you think the primary people we should be holding accountable are users themselves, the folks that are actually going to make use of this and put it in particular things, stand in the middle of the room. And lastly, if you think it's governments that should be held responsible and the collective that should be held responsible for AI, stand to the right. And so the class split up. This is my first time doing the exercise. I had no idea where they were all going to spread out. I was like, maybe they'll all be government. Maybe they'll all be corporations. But we had a pretty even spread. And so I challenged them. I said, okay, like, look around, like, see how your colleagues are and where you are in the room. And then I had them sit back down. And I was like, now I want you to think about what your top three values are. And there was like an audible gasp because people started realizing like, oh, this internal thing I value is exactly the choice I made. I had a student say, it's like, oh yeah, it's like one of my top values was autonomy. And so of course I'm going to go to the place where I think the individual is responsible. And like another student was like, yeah, it's like, I value like social solidarity and like service. So it's like, of course I'm going to think the government should be responsible. And I think for a lot of them, it was the first time making that connection. I'm like, oh, my internal values that I'm not aware of all the time shape who I think should be held accountable, right? And so it's like all of a sudden the question is like, oh, okay, wait, is my personal value, is like, is it good? Like, is it one that I should have? Should it be complicated? Like, maybe it should be a mix of all three. Maybe it shouldn't just be government. Maybe we got to find ways that the government, the individual, and the corporations are all involved and accountable. But if you're not aware of your values driving it, it's so easy to get like, no, it's just the government, or no, it's just people, or no, it's just the corporation. So yeah, I was really pumped at how that activity worked out.
Yeah, and I think it also shows how there's a level of ethics needed at each and every one of those.
100%.
Like, I don't want to say they're equally as important because, oh, maybe that's just a reflection.
Yeah.
But I think for regular people, like people who are just using AI on a day-to-day basis, I want to bring to life like what ethical frameworks they mm-hmm. can use or like can draw on
mm-hmm.
or values-based mm-hmm. frameworks. Because I think there's a lot of like, yeah, the AI company should be accountable. Government's
yeah.
policy should be accountable. But the reality is that there's not a ton of accountability happening within AI companies. Policy is lagging
yeah.
very far behind of AI progress,
yeah.
development, deployment. And so I think there is a large part of ownership that out of kind of necessity needs to fall on the users,
yeah.
people like you and I. And because right now there's not, especially in America, there's not laws and policies to protect people. Mm-hmm. Well, sorry, I don't want to say such sweeping statements.
Yeah.
There are a few laws and regulations. A couple have recently been passed in California, but there's certainly gaps that aren't protecting people. And I really want to talk about like what can people who are just either using AI, interested in using AI, afraid of AI, like how can we as AI ethicists kind of help steer them in their use of AI and hopefully give them feelings of like control,
mm-hmm.
a little bit of control back.
Oh man, that's such a huge question.
Yeah, maybe let's break it down into like, is there a values exercise that people, especially I think those of us who are using AI in our jobs and in our teams,
yeah.
let's use that example. You're working in maybe a tech company or another organization and your organization's kind of asking you to use AI or to build AI into your products.
Mm-hmm.
Like what are some ways people can integrate like an ethical mindset into that process?
So, I mean, the first step is like, people have to become aware of what their values are. And so the first step in doing that, I would say, yeah, go online, take the ethical value survey. I think it's $10. I'm not sure the exact price. They're going to love, man, I was like, they're going to love that I'm selling their product. But no, I think it's important work. If you can find any other ones, just do some research. I mean, you don't have to take a quiz to figure out. I think that's the most efficient way doing it. I guess that shows one of my values is efficiency. So figure out what your values are. Yeah. But then it's like, so once you've got a good understanding of kind of what yours are, do some research about like what you think your company's values are. Because it might turn out that you've got very different values than your company does. And I think most people aren't aware of this, is like so much of our anxiety and our pressure and our mental health issues, I think, are caused by this unseen gap between us having values and us working in places or having to do or feeling like we have to do things that don't align with our values. And because we're not aware of that gap, there's all this stressor because it doesn't feel good to do things that are against your values.
People like, I hate my job.
That's right.
Like,
yeah.
I hate this. And it's like, yeah, you probably do, but it's more that there's this like massive lack of alignment.
Yeah.
Like maybe you don't realize how much you value your own creativity.
That's right.
You value feeling purposeful.
And yeah.
And you're like, oh, this job is not
yeah.
doing those things. But it helps to define where are the, like, what are the actual gaps?
Yeah. And then this gets to the practical point, because I think one of the beautiful things about contemporary AI tech, specifically like large language models, ChatGPT, these models that we can give them inputs and they give us like cool outputs. Because I don't think the everyday person is using like advanced machine learning and like statistical reasoning to like analyze their massive large data sets. I mean, most people don't have access to large data sets. So we're talking about the LLMs and the chat models. So I think one of the beautiful aspects of these things is that they can help us do things that we don't actually like value. So it's like, if you're a person that maybe doesn't value kind of being original or creative, which is like blows my mind because like that's a massive value for me. But there are people out there that's like they don't care about originality or creativity. Have it have the like the model do the creativity stuff for you. Like, and like, it's not going to be like, you're not going to win the Nobel like laureate in literature for using a model, but nevertheless, like it can fill in that gap. Or if you're a person that like doesn't necessarily value like efficiency or anything, like,
or like, example I give is like, I don't ever want to learn how to code or like write, you know, code. I don't value that, like that part of my brain doesn't that way.
Yeah.
But could I maybe see there being a remaining human app one day?
There you go. Yeah.
But I don't want to build that.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, like I was talking about this with Don Allen Stevenson on my last podcast, like knowing your ikigai.
Yeah.
So, and which is just another form of knowing your values.
That's right.
Having deep, deep self-awareness.
Yeah.
Because I think that also speaks to not letting ourselves like atrophy.
Yeah.
And like decline, become disempowered as a species. Mm-hmm. Like we need to hone in on those things that we value.
Yeah.
And that allow us to be uniquely ourselves.
Yeah. And I would say, I think to that point, and this is, it might be like really similar. It's like the things that you value, AI might actually not be the best tool to help you get those. And I think this, so this comes down to like, a lot of people are like afraid about like job replacement and job loss. And I think that's real. I think there's like going to be tons of jobs that AI replaces. But we also, as humans, we like just doing things. Like, honestly, we live in an age where no one has to garden. Like, no one has to garden. It used to be like we as a species, like you had to like create your crops and do all that just to survive. No one has to do that anymore. We garden because it's fun. No one has to. I think about all like the engineers who are doing like tons of like free time work and like open source stuff, right? Like they spend tons of their time on Reddit or GitHub, like just creating new apps or like new things just because like they like being a part of the open source community. They don't have to do any of that. They just love doing that, right? So it's like we find ways to make work when we're given an opportunity. It's like when we're given like freedom, we find ways to work. We find ways to be productive. Humans like being productive. And the scary thing is like, okay, like, well, AI could make us overly productive. And then we're consuming more, exploiting more, extracting more. And we want to avoid that. But like, we'll always find things to do. And AI will just let us do the things we want to do and that we enjoy doing.
Yeah. I want to bring back to a point you said earlier around this idea of like, oh, okay, we're going to create more sustainable solutions to create AI that's more sustainable, but then the goalpost will
change
again.
Yeah.
And then it'll be like, oh, now those old solutions aren't sustainable anymore.
Yeah.
Now we've created all these more demands for more productivity, more technology, more like, and it really does come back to like shifting the goalpost, which is shifting the values.
Yeah.
And like we've talked a little bit about how to do that on an individual level. As a society, what do you think? And let's keep it like global society values. I don't even think we're supposed to have the same values as a global society or even as a country.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to have some kind of like understanding of what our values are as a country, because in the process of AI development, you know, right now, AI is large language models. It's generative, mostly generative AI. But in the process, in the very near future, there will be autonomous AI agents.
Yeah.
And those will need to be imbibed with some kind of value set. How do we grapple with that, knowing that our values are so different as a country, as a world, and that there's a small, like, subsect of people creating AI and training AI to behave in certain ways that will ultimately reflect some kind of value set?
Yeah. I mean, we're already seeing the effects. So like, I mean, all the concerns about the biases of the data and the biases of the algorithms, like we don't like having this mirror showing what it actually is that we value, but it turns out like, oh man, like the AI systems we created, like Amazon valued having male engineers as like their only engineer set back in like what, like 5 years ago or whatever. That was what their values were. And then they were confronted with it and they're like, oh, wait a minute.
So for anyone who doesn't know, Amazon created an internal tool to sift through like resumes and CVs an internal, you know, algorithmic tool that relied on like historical data, which, mm-hmm. which was the resumes that they'd received over the years and the people they'd hire over the years, which, not really a surprise here, disproportionately favored men. So they realized that this algorithm was heavily favoring male candidates and was discriminating against women.
And I mean, and I think the same thing, like, I mean, we're seeing it with black bodies and folks of color too. The tech is just showing us what has been like innate in us all along. And it's going to continue to be that until we have more humans involved. Like, I mean, another scary thing, this is a conversation that's constantly reoccurring, is right now AI and all this tech is incredibly like globally north and like even east and west. But what does that mean for the global south? And historically, like they're the ones, at least in the past like 100 years, that have suffered the most from the values of the global north. And so it's like, how do we like make sure like we're not repeating the same problems in history? And so like getting more folks in the global south involved. And yeah,
I mean, there's so many questions that we're grappling with in AI ethics. And I think it's helpful to like frame the question of AI ethics within a small example. So like, for example, when we think about the automation of jobs and specifically within the healthcare industry, mm-hmm. there's the potential for AI healthcare technologies to automate the work of reception, mm-hmm. radiologists, nurses. I recently spoke to a healthcare AI founder who he was actually quite confident about doctors remaining in the loop, mm-hmm. losing, you know, them not becoming obsolete. But he was very worried about potential for the rest of like the medical professions to be automated over time. But he said, if that happens, like the reason healthcare is so expensive in the US is because there's such a like, there's so many people who work in healthcare, so mm-hmm. they pay extra costs. He was like, healthcare will become so much cheaper for the end care patient. And he's like, that's what you have to grapple with. It's like, do you keep healthcare more expensive and therefore maybe people aren't getting healthcare, mm-hmm. and but you're keeping people in work? Or is it a question of, okay, we're going to like, yeah, let these people go and they're going to have to figure out, and like, I don't know if that's ethical, but we're now going to be able to give healthcare to a wider mm-hmm. Group of individuals. And this is what we struggle with.
Yeah.
As AI ethicists, it's like really like impossible choices. And then it's like you end up playing like these tech companies making these decisions.
Yeah.
I think that's where we as a society need to grapple with the decisions.
And I mean, okay, again, like the economic question is the biggest one. Like, we're going to have a fundamental shift in, or there has to be, if this technology is going to make it and be as prolific as we think, it's our entire economic system needs to change. Otherwise, we're going to end up in like some of those dystopic versions of like sci-fi history we see. And I think most people would prefer like a Star Trek type utopia, which has a very different economic model than the one we're functioning with right now. So like, even with the doctor's ones, like, again, I'm less concerned with it replacing like doctors, because again, I think there's going to always be people that want to be doctors. They like the idea of working like and helping people and like making people feel better. I think there will always be people that want to be nurses. Like, I've got a friend, he's just like, he finds so much meaning and value in being a nurse. And so if we could supplement him with like an AI that could do the stuff he doesn't like doing, like the charts and all that stuff, it would free him up to do the more human, meaningful work that he finds his most value in.
But the problem with that is that
that's right.
Is that just to keep people here?
So, yeah. And it's like we still have this like scarcity mentality, like there's not going to be enough for everybody. And so we have to compete over what little slice of the pie we have. But if we had different values and we recognize like, oh no, this planet actually is like built in a way that it could be completely like sustainable, or like relatively sustainable for at least another like 400,000 years. And by that, we might become an interplanetary species and like be able to get like supplement like material costs from other places. Like if we could recognize that, like there is enough for everybody, and this like culture of scarcity isn't real and it's falsified, and the competition doesn't have to be in that way. then it wouldn't be such a problem. Or if like, and again, I could see how, I can see why that was a value in the past, but it's like, we're developing tech where it doesn't have to be. Like, we have research now and the tech now that we can have our energy supply. I think I read this really interesting study that they're proposing, like functionally like putting solar panels across the US highway system. And they're like, if they did that, it would produce enough energy to like power 1/3 of the world. And yeah, like there's all sorts of like complex factors involved, but it's like we theoretically have everything we need to provide sustainable energy, sustainable power, which, okay, so like let's couple this sustainable energy use with like advancements in like robot tech that we're seeing. And like now we're having robots do things that are dangerous and unsafe. And like we start getting rid of those jobs that humans don't want to do. And then that frees up humans to do the jobs they want to do, and they can be better at the jobs that they want to do. And then it finds out, oh, actually, we don't even need robots to replace here because humans are getting better at these other things. I think so much of the fear is like, this is something I've been thinking about recently. Like, I think a lot of the fear people have about job replacement stuff is actually doing a disservice to what we humans are capable of. I don't think we've reached the apex of understanding what we can do as in these bodies. I think there's still way more. I think we haven't even discovered or tapped into the limits of our creativity, into our ability to care, into our ingenuity and all that. It's just like we've been so trapped under this scarcity mindset where we have to work, we have to do these things we don't want to do, that we're not freed to explore and expand ourselves. And that's my hope here. I wouldn't call myself an optimist. I don't know if we're going to get there, but I hope and I see potential for us to get there. And that's so exciting that this technology could allow us to be even more creative, more interesting than we already are, experiencing more beautiful things. Yeah.
That's the thing, is that AI truly has the potential to solve so many problems and to help us move out of our toxic ways of being, out of meaningless work, things that like have kept us really entrenched in these old paradigm ways of being.
Yeah.
But with that, it also has the potential to create all these new problems. Mm-hmm. But I want to talk about like your work in psychedelics.
Okay.
And like shifting gears, because I think psychedelics have the potential to like broaden our perspective around our values, around what we should value. It helps people feel more connected to nature, one another. What is that like crossover with AI and psychedelics that you've been working in? Where do you see the two overlapping, if at all?
I don't think it's a coincidence that AI technology has entered the mainstream conversation in the way that it has at the same time that psychedelics are now becoming more mainstream. I think we as a human species are, one, starting to recognize the intense trauma that we've been incurring on one another for hundreds of years. And we're starting to look for pathways of healing from that trauma. And that means both like personally on the individual level, like how do I heal my own trauma, but also how to heal societal and ethnic and national trauma as well. And so we're in this stage where we're recognizing the importance for healing, because like, as we also know, is like there's a mental health crisis, like among all the crises on this planet, there's a mental health one as well. And so I think psychedelics are definitely an important technology that will help us work through that. And so there's that aspect. And like, and then like the beauty and fear and worry about psychedelics as a technology is like what it does to us as humans, right? It's like it destabilizes like our mind, it gives us access, like it dissolves consciousness, blah, 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 all this like scary stuff, but it can be intensely healing. But it forces us to confront, what does it mean to be human? Is the most human thing about me my ego? Well, it turns out egos can dissolve, and some people don't want that.
And it's like bringing me back again to what you keep coming back to, which is values.
Yeah.
Like if we place so much value on reality as it is,
and
as we know it,
we
don't want anything to mess with that perception of reality, that blocks us from what you're saying around it, realizing that potentially there's so much more that we can be realized
and
experience.
Yeah.
And like shifting our values to one of like openness, greater creativity, feeling more excited about the future. This is something I teach in my workshops too. It's like, what future like can you envision?
Yeah.
Can you put down on paper, draw a picture of, like, how can we collectively imagine a different kind of future? Because I think what we envision and imagine with the help of psychedelics as well can help us live our way into that as we use this technology to, like, propel ourselves out of these old ways of being.
That's a beautiful bridge to how we get to AI. But I also want to quickly note, every time I talk about psychedelics, I want to make it really, really clear. Like, psychedelics are non-specific amplifiers. So we can use them for great effects, great healing, as really powerful tools. But, I mean, they can also be used to make a person more conservative. Like, there was a study done that, like, Nazis using psychedelics just become more Nazi, right? So it's like, it's not a panacea, but it's one more powerful tool in our toolbox. And when used right and used well, can have incredible effects and provide, like, again, if you value inefficiency, like, there's a lot of efficiency in the type of healing that psychedelics can bring. So then we bridge to AI, right? So, like, AI is a different tool that's challenging us about what it means to be human. So where psychedelics might be challenging kind of our internal state of, like, what does it mean to internally be a human and be in connection with this world, AI is challenging that in a different way. Because now AI can, well, one, it's also challenging internal stuff. It's like, it looks like it can think. It looks like it can make things. It can do art. But once we give them robot bodies, all of a sudden, oh, okay, it looks like they can make things and do stuff. So it's like, what is the unique thing about us? And that can be frightening and challenging. Then there's also, like, this profound gift. Like, so, like, psychedelics can open us up to this broader, beautiful, more profound experience of the world. And AI has the potential to do that as well, because it can do the stuff that we've felt like we've had to do for millennia that we don't have to do anymore.
And it's kind of bringing back to what I was saying, there's so much potential with AI for good, equally as much potential for it to be bad, or for it to go wrong, for these risks to be realized. And, like, kind of the understanding that there's just one AI. It's not like there's good AI or bad AI.
That's right.
There's one AI. So, again, bringing back to ethics and values, what are some ways that, I guess, both, like, technologists, the people building technology, and us, the general public, can help steer AI into that realm of good? Like, let's focus on the technology.
Yeah.
I think. And I know, you know, it's like knowing your values.
Yeah.
But I think it's a step further in that it is recognizing that this technology is not just about you and, like, your pay raise and your paycheck. Like, it's actually, like, I've heard from quite a few people, it's not even just about the money, which I think is a pretty popular conception, but it's also, like, you get to play with shiny new things. It's like,
yeah, I mean, we like innovation. We like creativity, all that.
Like, yes.
Yeah.
I'm glad you get to, like, play with shiny new things and you're doing amazing research. But I think it's also about realizing that this is not just about you. This is impacting so many humans who are just trying to, like, live their day-to-day life and, like, live a good life.
Yeah.
And how do we steer them towards, like, towards ethical decisions? It's like happening right now.
It is. I mean, I think, I mean, conversations like this, I think, help. But I mean, again, like, you and I are in this space. It's like, but it would be nice to encourage other folks to be talking about this stuff. One of the phrases I like to say is, like, look, we're not gonna solve the AI alignment issue until we solve the human alignment issue. So it's like, we're not gonna solve any AI ethical problems until we figure out our human ethical problems, because AI is just gonna mirror any of that. So self-awareness is the biggest first step. Figuring out why we're making the decisions that we're making. Slowing down would be nice, because it just gives us more time to reflect, more time to think about kind of who and what we are. But that's the biggest thing. But if you're stuck, or you feel stuck in a position where you, like, you have to keep making things and, like, your livelihood depends on, I totally get it. Like, that's a powerful, painful feeling, like, living, like, precariously. And so if you're feeling like you're living it precariously and, like, you still have to make decisions, like, yeah, do your best to make the ones that, yeah, I guess, align with what you care about. Because if you keep on making decisions, if you keep on making technology, if you keep on producing stuff that you don't care about, you're going to continue to suffer. And that means you're helping produce one more suffering human in this world. So take care of yourself. And I think a lot of people are too afraid to do that. But I think the other thing is people I think would be really surprised at how well they can live if they're willing to take care of themselves. And then that frees them up to take care of the few people next to them. And then once you take care of the few people next to you, then you can start taking care of community a little bit better. But it's like, we just keep on putting on ourselves in these positions of internal suffering because we feel like we have to do something, that we're expected to do something, that if we're not doing this, then like we're somehow less valued or less important. And so I guess, yeah, the first step is, well, this is like big and grand. You are amazing. Listeners, you're amazing. You're powerful. You're wonderful. And recognize that. And you don't deserve to be suffering in any way.
I like what you're saying around like needing, just around slowing down, and like if there was a way to fix humanity, like if we could slow things down, fix some of these problems. It's almost like, do you, I don't know if you ever did this when you were growing up, but as a kid, I went to this like small Catholic school, and sometimes if we were all having problems as a class, this collective, our teachers would put us in a room and we would like not have class for the day, and everything would pause until we figured things out amongst us.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, they were also facilitating that. Yeah. But that's coming to mind right now. I'm like, I just wish we, all of humanity, could get into a room and we could figure some of these things out.
Yeah.
Because until we do that, like, AI is just a tool that could amplify the hate and amplify the bad, when in reality, as we've been saying this whole time, it has all the power to all the good.
I realize too, it's like you keep on like pushing me to like give like ethical, like what people should do. And I keep on like getting begged. Like here's a different way of answering this. So like this is what I try to do. And this is what works for me. It's talking with other humans, being in community, asking for help when you need it. And then trying to surround yourself by art and creativity and natural beauty. Which, I mean, those are the things I value. I don't know. It's like, I hope they're leading towards something good, but like, that's what I would encourage others to do. But they might need to find things that like make them feel more alive and more human. So,
I love that. That's a beautiful sentiment to end on. Find the things that make you feel
alive. Yeah.
Alive and more human. Because when you're feeling alive and centered and human, you're going to make decisions, I think, that are aligned for yourself and for the collective.
And read more ethics. Read more philosophy. Read more important pieces of literature. I know people don't like reading nowadays. Man, listen to an audiobook. Do it.
And try to bring, and I'll link to this in the post, but like bring some kind of values framework or canvas. Mm-hmm. There's one I'm using right now, into your decisions, particularly as it comes to work. Like, and this values canvas helps you think about what are the benefits? What are the risks? Mm-hmm. Who is most benefiting this thing that I'm building? Is it the company I'm working for? Is it me? And has you kind of like really put down on paper, I guess, like what you're valuing, the decisions that you're making, that in itself serves as a mirror.
I can also, it's like, well, you can post a bunch of stuff in the show notes and the show links. I've got a whole list of like amazing questions for folks to ask, like come from study of indigenous methodologies and indigenous research. They're just like worthwhile questions. Like, who's your decision affecting? Like who, like what are the consequences? All sorts of like fantastic questions. So
amazing. Okay. Thank you for this.
You're very welcome. This is awesome.
Integrate ethics, ask questions, and we'll work it all out.
It's going to be a slow process. Like change is slow.
It takes